because there are a lot of shops that are 3, 4, 5 years and you're still not paying yourself a healthy salary and you're in the $1 million range. You know, I think one thing, Weston, you know, like it seems like the people that you've worked with have swallowed their pride and ego a little bit, said like, okay, there's a better way to do this.
If you need a solution to improve efficiency and reduce costs in your art department, hit up Graphic Stores. They offer industry leading outsource options for your shop by truly becoming a part of your team. They plug and play with Printavo and other shop management software. And when it comes to SEPs, mockups, creative art, order management, embroidery, digitizing, they have over 40 years in the game. They really know and understand shop needs. They have a proven track record of success. They run our art department. They handle all of our SEPs. They live in our Printavo. Hit up Graphic Source. You can get 50% off your first vector, SEP, or embroidery order. They will absolutely be at Long Beach. Easy Way is launching a new giveaway to give back to their amazing customers. Each month, they're giving away a $250 prize, and it's super easy to enter. You can go to easyway.com/giveaway. Make reclaiming screens a whole lot easier with Easy Way systems and chemicals. Enter their giveaway. Go check them out at Long Beach. We use Easy Way products every single day. If you don't know, you know now. Have you heard of Multicraft underscore daddy? If you need ink supplies or a daddy, Multicraft screen printing and digital supplies for over 50 years has been providing you with top brands at competitive prices. If you mention the Printavo podcast, you'll receive an extra 10% off your order. Dave gives away a free case of PMI tape for every episode. All you have to do is go to his Instagram, Multicraft underscore daddy, follow, like, look at all of his corny videos, and shoot him a note, and he'll enter you in for a drawing. This is for new customers only, but give Dave a follow. If you're ready to take your custom apparel to the next level, you should definitely check out Stahls. Stahls is the leader in heat printing solutions. Whether you're a small business just starting out or an established brand that's scaling up, Stahls makes the hustle easy. They're here so you can simply heat press and profit. I've been developing a new patch line for headwear and I've been using Stahls. I've been specifically using some of their new PVC, like the silicone silicone patches that have been incredible. Whether you're, you know, looking to do DTF patches, order twill, you name it, hit up Stahls. You can save 20% on your next DTF transfer order using the code Hustler20. They will absolutely be at Long Beach. We appreciate you, Stahls. All right, let's hop on into the episode.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're live, Weston.
Well, then we'll just jump right in. You know, how are you guys doing?
You're the host today, Weston.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, Weston, what questions
hey,
do you have?
Hey guys, you've built an incredible podcast. You know, I see things on the upward trajectory. What's next? Are you guys coming out with like a merch line? Are you guys signing some deals with, you know, some big retailers to get, you know, this podcast off the ground more than it already is?
Well, we want to first buy a G-Wagon and then we'll figure it out.
Those are bad life choices, speaking from experience.
Gotcha. Okay.
All right. We're flipping this back around. All right. So Weston Cotton, custom print graphics, fabric member, Impressions Long Beach participant recently. We were able to hang out in California, took you out of your comfort zone in Illinois. I think Kevin Baumgart introduced us a while ago, and it's been fun to be able to get to know each other. You have an interesting past and getting into this space too, which was why Steven and I thought it'd be great to talk about it, to dive a little bit deeper. So yeah, I mean, you bought a shop, you bought a contract shop.
I did. Yep. So recently acquired a shop in May of 2025 and brought me back to the screen printing and embroidery world before, to go back, I was a competitive wakeboarder and then got injured doing that and started making t-shirts for a mega yacht marina in West Palm Beach. I'm a Florida guy originally, so started making some shirts through a connection there. And I asked one of my sponsors who made your shirts, and they introduced me to this guy, Tom King, and he was kind of the back of the house production. And I was front the sales side of things and put together that company in my dorm room sophomore year at college and grew that for 7 years and then sold that to my business partner at the time and then went and worked in corporate America for about a decade in the meat business, running a division of a small division in a large company. And so learned a lot doing that and punched the ticket there and was looking for something else to do and looking for a business to acquire and looked around in different industries and came across Custom Print Graphics. And that kind of leads us to where we are today.
What are the industries we're looking at?
So I probably started my search. I think you're familiar with ETA, entrepreneurship through acquisition. Was really the route I wanted to go. I wanted to step into a business with a kind of management level and some other revenue markers that would make the transition easier going from corporate America into full-time entrepreneurship. And so I looked at a fasteners business that was making parts for medical facilities, the tracks that would go around, for bedding. And so they were making the tracks and all the other parts that went along with that. I looked at a lift company down in South Florida, was trying to get back down to South Florida. And so I looked at a lift manufacturer that would go and install and put lifts behind your house for boats. So those are two I was kind of intently looking at. And it was like kind of high to COVID. It was really tough to do transactions then. It was all cash. The multiples were crazy. Financing was super cheap. It was basically zero. So things were flying at really high multiples. I just couldn't get comfort around some of the deals and, kind of took a pause and then moved to a little town in Illinois, got out of the city, and my daughter bought me a hat for the town. And I said, I think I can make this better. And I went to the place that she bought it. I said, if I made some hats, would you sell it? And they said, yes. And I contacted a friend that knew someone in the screen printing embroidery space. And I went into the shop and basically fell in love with it and asked, after a few visits, went to the bookkeeper and the owner's wife, thinking, I said, this has got to come from you and it's going to be crazy, but I want to buy your business. And kind of fell flat for a few months. And, I got an email randomly, hey, let's go grab lunch, from the previous owner. And we sat down and it took about a year and a half. I was still in my corporate job, so no rush to get into it, and took our time. And I think that is what really made the deal come together. It was, the lack of urgency on my side and his side, that we just got to know each other over the course of a year and a half and knew that, if we could get a deal together, it was, more so on the relationship side and we'll work out all the financials on the back end. And so we were able to do that.
Weston, you said though that you were looking for a business to make the transition easier from corporate to running something. What were the characteristics of that? Like, was it, there was a team in place, so you wouldn't be, running around doing everything, that there was management, maybe there was a certain profit level that made you feel comfortable. Like, what were those characteristics?
Yeah, it revolved around the revenue of the business, right? I've, a house and kids and a lifestyle I need to maintain. So the revenue needed to be there. With that, you kind of have a little bit less vulnerable. The business is more established at a certain level, and then also to the level of management where I can step in and I'm not running day-to-day functions and kind of work on high level optimization and pushing the business to the next level. Just kind of step in as I think we had talked earlier, like a CEO level, but not really. I would say more of a consultant level and look through the business and figure out where our weaknesses and where we can kind of add value for our customers and for the business itself.
So Weston, I think we met probably a couple years ago when you were just like exploring the space, learning about it. What are some of, and you probably explored a lot of different businesses by doing this and you've learned a lot. What were the red flags? What was like when you looked at a business and it had this and this, it was an automatic no?
Yeah. So I'll give you an example. So I looked at I found Custom Print Graphics and we were moving slow on that. And just going through the numbers, I knew I had to scale it pretty quickly to get to where I needed it to be. And so I was looking around at other businesses, and while under contract with Custom Print, I submitted an LOI on another business in Wisconsin. They had about 30,000 square feet. 4 automatics and 60 heads of embroidery, doing around $2 million of revenue, just straight contract. It was a really good deal. The purchase price was at liquidation, I felt, and went up there and did due diligence on it. And we went, you know, I was in the deal probably for 6 months in that space. And we sat down with the owner, had been removed for a year and a half, which was a kind of a red flag. We weren't getting answers kind of as quickly as we wanted to, or answered in a manner that we, you know, we would like, and then sat down with the management team there and said, we're really going to need to grow this business. You know, $2 million for a shop that size is really low. And so we're going to really need to, you know, add a couple $1 million within the first year to make this business viable. And the whole team was like, we're at capacity, that we just can't do that. And right there, I knew that that deal was not going to happen. I was going to have to go and change personnel. I would have to do a lot of the work myself, even though there was a layer of management. I just, you know, didn't feel comfortable around that. And you know, I think about that deal.
Because they were more comfortable doing what they were doing now, and I guess like they were allergic to change, you're saying?
I don't know if they're allergic to change. I just think maybe the culture there wasn't, you know, I think when someone steps in, you're going to be making, like you said, changes pretty quick. And you know, if you come in and just, you know, I mean, that's a pretty simple ask. Like, hey, we're gonna bring a bunch of volume in, and we just got to get it done, right? I'm not asking for them to bring the volume in. I just said, you know, we're gonna bring it in, and I need you guys to produce this. And it was standoff, you know, right there, big red flag.
So what I'm hearing is, in order to have a business that's appetizing to someone that wants to acquire it, it's not so much about the owner, but the team that's ready for growth or could adapt to it or is hungry for it. That's really interesting, like the personality of the staff, because God forbid you come in and the staff, you know, they could walk away the next day and be like, screw this guy. That's really interesting. What other red flags, Weston, maybe when you looked at financials, what would you have to sift through? What was the bullshit? Like, yeah, talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so when we're looking at the financials, we use a term called SDE, seller discretionary earnings. Some people call that EBITDA. We just call it cash flow, right? So we're looking for a cash flow number that is easily traced back through their bank accounts, right? And if you're under LOI and getting a peek under the curtain to the financials of that company, which usually you need to be vetted before then, and you know, a broker or whoever you're working with, you know, you've got to make yourself, you know, known that you're able to acquire this business. But then once you're under and looking at that, it really is looking at that. And a lot of businesses that are purchased, you know, you're using some kind of leverage debt to do that transaction. So with that, you know, there's a cost. So you've got to be able to make sure that the business can cash flow, right? So you start there and look at the financials and say, if I'm going to put a loan on this business, is it going to cash flow with this extra payment on it, right? And then you kind of, then we would work our way outside of that. But it really is figuring out the cash flow and the STE of the business is, you know, they're adding their car, all the ad backs in it, verifying the ad backs, because some of the ad backs aren't really real, right? They're trying to inflate that number, but you're going to have some of those expenses anyways.
So basically what you're saying is, if you were to look at a business that was doing $1 million a year, but they made zero profit at the end of the year, but the owner paid themselves $100,000 and they had a G-Wagon and they were using lots of miles and they were, you know, they had a luxurious Costco receipt. You would look at that and say, okay, there's $120,000 of seller's discretionary earnings. That's not profit, because it's not actually showing as profit. But if I were to go take a loan on this business and that owner was no longer there, I would be using that money to pay the loan off. And so you're almost like, I don't care what your P&L says, I'm actually going to look at what like the real numbers are going to cash flow. Is that what you're saying?
That's a good point. And then that's how we look at it. But then also to, from a bank standpoint, right? Like it's got to appraise, right? So some owners, you know, we've looked at businesses that were ready to sell that had their P&L looking like they are going to sell, right? We've looked at other businesses where there is a lot of that seller ad back, but then if you're to go into underwriting with a bank, you know, they're not going to give you a loan on that. So it doesn't make your the value of your business kind of goes down if that's your model to go to market to try to sell. So there is a give and take. You're going to have to pay some taxes. We're looking at tax returns as well in this process. So, you know, I think in a small business, you're trying to hide as much as you can. But if you're going to try to sell, you're going to start having to show some profit just, you know, be able to get financing on the business.
And that's what you mean by we needed scale, like that business that you didn't go forward with, it didn't have enough profit to be able to get a loan on it. You're saying. So we needed to ramp up revenue to be able to get profits to pay the business off plus the loan. Is that what you mean?
The purchase price was low enough that you could cash flow. I just thought we were going to have a hard time in acquisition one and scaling, right? We were going to have a lot of adversity into our model of, you know, kind of the Walker die build, buy, then build, right? So we were going to buy and build that business. And that layer of management wasn't really on board with aggressive growth.
Interesting. So when you say the business has to appraise for, and then you use this word like liquidation value, essentially a business will appraise for, you know, a multiple of profit plus the assets that they have at garage sale prices, right? Like if you were to shut this thing down. So really, if a company doesn't show any profit, their value just might be their equipment. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I can give you some context or color around that deal. So at $2 million of revenue, we were under contract for $600,000 plus receivables, which was another $100,000. So for $500,000, I could have got $2 million of revenue, a 30,000 square foot facility, 60 heads of embroidery and four automatics, like four forklifts. Like it was a pretty sweet deal. But for transit, you know, like it was an hour and a half away from my house. It was going to require a lot of time. I wasn't necessarily out of corporate America at the time. I would have liked something to kind of run itself. But I just couldn't get comfortable around the management situation. You know, it was a more of a cash deal for us. And, you know, so it would have cash flowed, but we were really wanting to grow, right? I think to step into the space.
And that $2 million in revenue, what was, are you able to share what the profitability was like at that $2 million revenue? Or was that the one that break even?
Yeah, no, they were, in looking through it, they were, you know, kind of overpaying over the course of the year. People were taking more than they probably should. We were looking at like the profit, we decided it would probably be around 15% net profit is what it was throwing off. So it was very profitable for a business. Because in Wisconsin, it's very cheap to operate. Labor is cheap. The building itself was, compared to what we're paying now in rent, is, you know, a third of the price. It was just the hassle of going to run that job.
So let's just say, okay, you've met this company. This is a great simulation right now. This is amazing. So let's just say you're like, okay, I like this business and I want to buy it. And we've agreed upon $500,000 for it. What's next? Like, you know, there's like seller financing, SBA loans. Like, how do you, you know, earn out structure? What happens next in that situation? If you agree upon a number and you're like, we want to do this. How do you actually now, like, it's not like you just hand over a check for $500,000 unless, you know, I don't know, maybe. But how does it actually start to work?
So the way that it would work in a typical deal, right? So you would submit an LOI, letter of intent, right? You're basically putting everything on paper, what you say you're going to do. The owner would agree to that letter and sign it and send it back. And then in that time frame, you would move into your due diligence phase and then propose within that time a formal offer letter. And that's when hard money gets involved. You're putting your deposit down. And you're really starting to dig through the numbers of that business and kind of going through that. So when we were talking with management, we were, you know, we had a deposit down and we had access to, you know, bank accounts and we were rectifying.
And the deposit's like a few percentage?
Yeah, usually 10%. It depends. This deal was interesting. We had to put 20% down and there's a couple of people bidding on it. So we kind of went in and said, we'll put a big deposit down. We're real serious. We want to figure this deal out. So anywhere from 10 to 20%. And it it depends. And that was on the broker side. They wanted that 20% and we pushed for 10, but at the end of the day, it was a 20% deposit, and then started going through that. And then once you feel comfortable around that deal, it's probably wise to bring in an attorney to start looking at it and seeing where, you know, some pitfalls could be. And then also an accountant to really start going through it. So we did like a mini Q of E on it, and just looked through deeper financials and paid an accountant to do that. And a Q of E is a quality of earnings.
You have to come up with 20% to put down some money. And then the remaining $400,000, like how would you structure that? What would you propose in that situation?
So if the owner was involved, I think it is wise to have them carry some debt on the business. 10% is typical in the deal. And as financing is harder to get, it can move up to higher to 20% of seller financing on the deal. And then moving to debt, that depends. You can go SBA, conventional. I think SBA is a really good route as well on that. And so you can put less down, and there's some nuances with seller keeping some equity or keeping part of the deal. And some of that changes kind of year to year from SBA. But then that kind of gives you assurance as a first-time buyer buying a business that the owner is selling what they say they are selling.
How do you verify the financials? You talked a little bit about that with like hiring an accountant or something. Like, you know, they give you, I'm assuming, P&L, but that's just, you know, anyone can make something up.
So you're going to get the bank statements from them for the course of 2 to 3 years, all the bank statements. And so what you're paying for an accountant to do, or you could do it yourself, is rectifying each month. They said that they deposited this and this much went out, and then you can kind of see the spread of what it was, and you can kind of see the kind of cash flows of that business and start to build out your kind of financial plan, because as you step into the business, you're going to need a little bit more cash to operate, right? Whether you're going to buy the receivables or the receivables go with the owner, you're going to have to pay rent and payroll and all your expenses, you know, the first, you know, month, or depending on your terms with your customers, is it net 30 or net 60? It may be, you know, 2 months you're going to have to pay rent and payroll up front. So kind of going through that, your accountant can kind of model what you needed to, need after closing as well. But they can rectify the bank accounts to verify what they're saying the business is doing. Tedious job.
So they could do it for you. That's cool.
They do it. If I did it, it would be wrong. So
let's talk about the shop that you bought. It probably took you, you said, like 2 years to get this thing closed. Does that sound right? Around there. Okay. So then, yeah, when did you guys actually, when was your first day in new business? Like, when was that?
It was the beginning of May of 25.
So it has been 9 months. And what was the first, why the hell did you get in this industry?
Wait, and why a contract shop? I think that was, you know, there's a couple different, obviously, but why 100% contract?
So I think when you're out looking for a business, you can't really choose, per se, the industry. I would say contract found us. You know, it just so happened we found a great business with great financials and great people, and they were in the contract space. So I figured, this is the route I'm going. I got to figure out how this side of the business works. So when I had the company in college, we were a direct side. So I understood that, right? Getting customers and producing that. But this on the contract side, I had to get a little bit more familiar with how that business operates. So I wasn't going to flip the model. I was just going to take the model and kind of enhance what they were doing. So it was a contract shop, and I walked in and I just had to roll with it.
Not everyone can buy a shirt for $3 and sell it for $40. Moving on, what was your first like 90 days like? Okay, so like, yeah, talk to us, or leading up to it. Like, yeah, what was the first couple of months like?
Yeah, so usually, you know, you spend a lot of time thinking and pre-acquisition kind of what you're going to do. And some people say it's wise to wait, you know, 6 months, 3 months, kind of get to understand what's going on in the business, who's making the decisions, and who your key players are within the business. I think within 5 weeks of acquisition, we bought another business and brought that business into it. So we really disrupted everything at Custom Print. In the beginning, we were bringing in a bunch more embroidery and a lot of other equipment that, you know, the first 100 days kind of made it chaotic. But, you know, I think we could have done a better job of explaining our overall thoughts of what we're going to do to the team. You know, I just think it was a little bit chaotic. They didn't see the forest through the trees on what we were trying to accomplish at times when it was really wild. We took a really big order as well. At the same time, it was like 50,000 units. It was 400 SKUs and it was shipping to 300 different locations. And so we were producing that and fulfilling it all at the same time. I was moving embroidery stuff around and I took 10 40 wide dumpsters of stuff out of the facility that had just been sitting there for years. So we were cleaning up and doing all that. So it was kind of all hands on deck and trying to manage the mayhem per se.
That's wild. Wait, why? You just said bought a second shop. Sound like an embroidery shop? What was the thought process there?
Going back to tie in where, you know, looking into this industry, I was, you know, having to scale the business to be where I kind of needed it to be financially. And I knew the fastest way to do that was through acquisition. So our thought in going into this was we're going to grow it through acquisition. So in that time, we had identified other businesses and been on the hunt while we were under, you know, trying to close our deal. We're looking at other deals and this deal was just on the back burner and we were waiting to push the button until we closed on Custom Print. So this one was just waiting for us and we closed and then we got to work on that deal. We had pretty much 90% of it done and then went through. But, you know, I think how we transact is a little different. We get creative. I look for more of a company that is tougher to sell, that is really hard, so we can get creative financially around it. And it gives us a little bit more leverage than a really good cash flowing business. So this business was more distressed and you know, we're kind of swooping into.
I really like that. It sounds like you're working backwards from something because you said a couple times, to scale the business where I need to be. I think you said it like three times. So it's like, you don't have to share like exact number, but like what is the North Star in a way that you're working backwards that drove you to acquire both of them, combine it and say, hey, we need to add X sales, have Y profit and so on.
I wouldn't say it's a North Star, but it is, I think, you know, as you guys get older, you know, there's a, you know, just a lifestyle that you know, you got a house and kids and you need to make a certain amount where, you know, you got to build a business to do it. You know, I knew day one, it wasn't going to happen, you know, so my 10 years in corporate America, it was pretty diligent about, you know, saving and being financially smart around that. Right. So I think there was, you know, there's some months where I just, you know, I was living off of a savings and not taking out of the business, but growing the business is ultimately key. Otherwise I would have found a different business or stayed in corporate America. But I knew I needed.
Totally. So it's like owners. So generating a comfortable owner's income and it sounds like a balance of that and just like general lifestyle. Cause he talks about not wanting to be like in the weeds. You need that management layer to help once things get stable, to be able to help run it.
Weston, what was one of the biggest surprises, like day one or month two or whatever, that you're like, maybe an oh shit moment?
Buyer's remorse.
Yeah. Like, I'm sure this keeps up at night sometimes. Like, what did you learn about it? And you're like, oh, wow. Okay.
I am fortunate. I haven't really had that. But I would say one thing looking back, I probably should have bought the receivable. It would have made it a little bit softer landing. Into that, being a contract shop, you know, our payroll is pretty high, and you know, our rent and everything. So, and some of our terms are 60 days, and I think in, you know, future acquisitions, I'm really gonna lean on, you know, taking the receivables into the business, so I don't kind of have that gap. But I will say the sellers, they gave us a product better than what they were selling. You know, we were under contract for almost a year is when they signed the LOI of the, you know, the financials. We said we were going to pay, and the business kept growing and growing and growing. They never came back and said, hey, this year we're up 20%. I need to charge you 20% more. You know, it was just, I got really comfortable around the people selling the business, and they currently are in the business till this day, right? So they knew that going in, that they weren't just exiting and I was going to be handed this, problem. They were there through the fight of everything, and they probably work more now than they did when they owned it. You know, I think they've caught the vision of what we can build. And I think the industry is ripe for some consolidation. And so they see it, and they see it happened multiple times. So we've just closed our third acquisition, and probably in the next 2 months will be our fourth. So within a year, we've done four. Third was a very similar business to our second, and they had a lot of great equipment. We needed to upgrade some of our screen printing presses, and they had a good revenue. They just had kind of tough times and kind of got over-levered in that. So we consolidated some of their debt and used their equipment as collateral for that. And I think freeing up a shop, probably doing under $2 million and doing the production in-house is very expensive to do. So now we've seen this in our second acquisition, where we took away the burden of producing the product and they can go and sell. They've almost doubled the projections we thought from a contract number, right? We thought, okay, this year, this business should bring in contract wise, you know, whatever, $500,000, and they ended up doing $1 million. So, and that was within 6 months. So I think with taking out the day to day of putting the key in the door and unlocking and making sure all the employees are there, you're focused on selling, you're focused on, making sure you're finding the best products. And then also too, I think these companies weren't doing as much in the promotional space. So now they're getting more involved with the ASI and the Sages and selling all the hard goods as well, which is helping their profitability.
So then, Weston, do you run these businesses separately, or is this now under NewCo, like as you roll these companies up?
So they are, it depends on the deal, but a lot of the distressed businesses have so much debt that we won't do a full acquisition on that, right? We'll put a service management agreement in place that we're going to do all their contract work. They're going to run their own P&Ls, their own financials. They're responsible for that debt, right? Like, so if you were to go buy an entity, they're going to have to pay off all their debt before you buy it. These companies were just not in a place to pay their debt off, right? But they had healthy revenue. And, you know, for us looking at it as a contract shop, we could bring that in. So essentially kind of buying that business, but then also it makes it stickier where the business that we're partnering with, they have still debt to pay. So they are hungry to keep motivated and selling, right? So it's kind of a win-win.
But you own it though, right?
We don't own, no, we won't own all of it. We'll own some of it over time. Every deal is a little different. We'll structure it where as time goes, we're buying some of the business kind of slowly. But typically, we aren't going to own that entity full outright. We'll own the rights to produce it. So we're like licensing the business.
Because things could go south if, you know, sales drop or they can't pay down the debt on their equipment or whatever, right? And so you're trying to like collateralize it and kind of lock it up. And these deals are usually what, like 3-4 years? Like what's a typical cycle in this to so that everyone feels good at the end of it?
Yeah, it's 24 to 36 months typically is where we project it, and then we'll go back to the drawing table then if we need to and look at it, you know.
And what's the fourth company? Tell us about that. What was the advantage there?
Yeah, the fourth company is a contract shop. The other two are kind of a hybrid contract and direct, right, which really helps in our model. So they can make money on the shirt, and then they take our contract pricing and add to that and go back to the customer. And that's how they're going to make their margin to keep their business, in business. But the fourth deal is part two. We are looking to improve our staff, and this company has a really good staff, and they know how to do it. So we are, you know, we're looking for A players on our team. And so we feel this other company has a lot of A players and just right for, you know, the company's been around a long time, a younger owner, hadn't really broke through the glass ceiling per se, and it, looking to us and what we're doing in the industry, and really likes that and wants to get on board with us. And so we're just going to, that'll be a straight merger where we're bringing everything into to us. And so we're getting some equipment on that deal and really looking for the people aspect on that as well is why we're interested in that.
It's interesting how you like scout companies. You're like, okay, that's going to be good for equipment. We can get a good deal there. Okay, that's a good hire for people because they have really good leadership, or that's a good acquisition because they're good at promo products. What you are doing, so like the industry understands, this is called like a roll-up strategy, right? Is that typically what it's called? I think. And it's very hard to do, and it takes time, and everything needs to like figure itself out. But what is your, like how big, you know, when you just start talking about, okay, it's a $2 million shop, million dollar shop, all of a sudden overnight, you now have a $7 or $8 million company. How, you know, what's the plan from here? How big, how much can you roll it truly up? What are you after?
We're out there. You can hypothetically do that. But as soon as you start really digging in, you see how hard, and you know, you guys know this, you've run big businesses, to digest the business that you have coming in and do it accurately and on time. So we are really constrained by, you know, a few things, equipment, personnel. And so once we kind of get those, then it can scale a lot faster. But within the, you know, 9 months and kind of everything we did, we went in and you know, we're looking to build out, you know, the kind of SOPs and operational efficiencies within the business. So we did a lot. We brought some kind of like high, you guys have been around the industry for a long time that have run shops with, you know, 20 autos, and we brought it into our shop, which is 4, you know, but we're planning on growth. So we've kind of put, you know, putting some of that in front before we really grow. You know, the target is, you know, I you know, don't want to say just now, just because it's so early on, but you know, it is kind of a big, big target that, you know, we have in front of us to do it, but we've got to have all of our systems in place to really do it. Otherwise we will just be stuck in the mud and not get out.
Can we talk about some of the, so like, we met you at Print Hustlers a couple of years ago. You started coming to industry stuff. We hung out all weekend in Long Beach. I guess we're your only friends right now. We got pancakes. Man, you got dinner with us twice and breakfast. This guy. What else are you doing to level your game up industry-wide? Like, talk to us about that. Talk to us about Made Lab, like all the stuff you're doing with Tom. Yeah, tell us about that.
And what do you like? Where do you learn stuff from too? Because like, I'd imagine it's outside the space too.
In the space, right? We knew we wanted to bring some experts on pretty quick, so we got the guys at Made Lab. The first Print Hustlers we went to. Shout out to Print Hustlers. I think it's good to get to know people in the industry. We went there and we kind of met a bunch of people. Took some guys out to dinner and met the guys at Made, and you know, they kind of pitch us on what they do on that side. And as we were looking at our business, we said we want to bring some experts in to, you know, see what we're not seeing, because we're, you know, I didn't you know, necessarily know the ins and out on production at that scale. And so we brought Made in. They did a lot of things for us on the screen printing and SOP side, and kind of brought some clarity around some ideas that we had, but just with, you know, the guys that have run big shops. So that was really good. That helped us. I think that, you know, getting in with Fabric, I've got a great group there with guys that run shops that are way bigger than ours. And they've given me some insight and encouragement as I'm doing this. And I think from my perspective, I'm also giving them, you know, some, you know, good things to think about as well, as they've been in the industry for a long time. But getting into those groups is really helpful, just to better, you know, your knowledge around it. But then outside, you know, with the ETA stuff, there's a podcast Will Smith has. It's called Inquiring Minds, and it kind of walks you through deal flow, and it gets you more details around deals. It gives you comfort, you know, like around how it should work. And I think that's a good place to go learn, you know, from a podcast. And I've read the books in the ETA world, but there's, you know, Buy Then Build, and then there's the Harvard Business Review, how to buy a small business, I think it is. And it, you know, those are just good starting places to understand kind of how how that world works.
Pretty crazy how quickly it's like within a couple of years, you're becoming an expert in something just because you're just like a student of it. And I give you a lot of credit for that because like some shops think they've known it all, have it all figured out and, you know, are like, I'm not doing this or paying for that or, you know, whatever. Like I already do all this stuff, but you're like, nope, we're bringing the best consultants in the industry to come teach us how to print. We're going to join the best coaching group in the industry called Fabric. We're coming to the best conferences. We'll be at every trade show. And we'll be at lunch, breakfast, and dinner with you. That is intentional. And you're kind of fun to hang out with. We think you're okay. But like, you know, I think a lot of shops could take motivation and inspiration from it of like, you have to constantly be a student of the game every single day. And look at how quickly you can just level this up. Like you're in a group with Dan Frank and like, that's a pretty powerful group right there. You know, Dan's going to keep you honest. So I just think it's super cool how you jumped in like 2 feet. How's your work-life balance, Weston?
Yeah, no, at times it gets really busy and sometimes it's not. I think looking back post-acquisition, the first year I really need to get my hands around the business and understand kind of all aspects. So really into the weeds. And I think for 2026, I'm trying to take a step back and work on some more high-level things. For the business is, you know, finance and then also two partnerships. You know, I want to be really intentional about who we're working with. I keep telling the team we're only as good as the people that are working here and then also to the customers that we work with, right? So in building better relationships around our current customers and then, you know, we're in talks with some big companies as well to help grow the business outside of acquisition, but our true growth model is acquisition, but, you know, get more involved with that, which it takes a lot of time to do. Each deal, you're talking with the owners of the business for hours and hours and hours, and it's weekends and it's lunches, it's dinners, it's go, go, go. But doing what you love doesn't feel like work. I know it's a cliche, but it is true. And so you just kind of find that next year and get into it and start, you know, building something that you want to build. So that's the energy that I live off of. So it doesn't feel like work and, you know, getting to do fun stuff like this, to hang out with you guys. And I like the space and the people in the space is a lot of fun. The meat industry, which I was in before, is very closed off and, you know, old school. And, you know, it take me a long time to get to the table of the guy, the cool guys, which, you know, fortunately it didn't take me that long to figure out who the cool guys are and start hanging out with them like you guys. So, you know, it's a good industry.
What specifically does your role look like then now? Like, are you, you know, do you meet weekly with management? Then, you know, you talk about managing finances. It sounds like you're doing sales and outreach to land some big whale clients to bring them in. Is that on or what else?
Looking at it, it is, you know, I structure part of my day around finance. Right. Making sure, you know, looking at cash flows and working with, you know, we brought up within the organization a girl to run our finances. So now I have a finance manager that is looking over that and spending time with her. And then also too on the production side, making sure that, you know, we've within the company started a new role for someone to really oversee that and build out some SOPs and follow through. So then I'm in the weeds with him on that. And then there is the acquisition side, which is taking time to do, you know, like the everything necessary and going through the financials of companies and trying to structure deals on that. So it is it's kind of all over. It depends on the day, but you know, those are my core kind of competencies that I try to, you know, live within.
But you have like, because the owners are still involved in the business, the businesses are still running, right? So it's not like you are in the shop every day going over a production schedule. Like, you know, these owners that you've acquired are now sort of like partners to you. And so like, I think that's an important part to be able to work on the business. You still need like really good management, which it sounds like you put a lot of time in. What, you know, what scares you about all of this? Like what could go terribly wrong? Cause it all seems so beautiful and like, you know, get rich quickie. But like, what are we missing that like could really be a dumpster fire? And I don't want to put this out in the ether, but Tell us about like the shitty part of this.
Yeah, it is payroll, right? I think managing your staff well, we've got about 50 people, is where you're going to make your money, right? You've got to be diligent on that and, you know, maximizing your team to get the most out of them without adding overhead. And that's probably the most expensive. That is the most expensive thing in this industry is the people. So really making sure you know, we're pretty adamant about A players, and we, you know, hire fast and fire faster. And we're just looking for kind of top talent that can catch our vision of building a world-class company within, you know, the screen printing and embroidery space and staying focused on that. But that is one thing that'll just keep creeping if you don't watch it. I think digital is going to be a big player in this space. I don't think screen print and embroidery is going away, but I do think consolidation into digital is, you know, probably something that next year we'll start looking at more of the digital space. And there's some big players out there. I know through Print Hustlers, the first one we went to, we got to go to Stakes and see their operation, and you know, it's just mind blowing what these companies are doing out there. But I think digital is something that keeps you up a little bit at night and getting into that.
What about like financing? Do you have to have really good relationships with banks to make this all work? Do you have like, are you a trust fund baby? Like how is this all working?
Yeah. So you've got to, build it out. And when I wish daddy, you know, you have a great dad. I mean, a lot of what I've learned, my dad was an entrepreneur.
Brian wouldn't be Brian Pit Chops if he.
Yeah, I wouldn't be in the screen printing space. I'd be out surfing with Kevin probably. The first deal that we looked at in just outside of Milwaukee, right? We were talking to a bunch of different banks, and actually the broker had a really good relationship with the bank, and we just sat down and were on calls with banks all day and lined them up back to back to back and started understanding what banks, you know, because there's different variables that they're looking at too on the business. So even if you have a good relationship with the bank, they might not be comfortable around that specific deal. So having a backup bank is key. So we meet with our bankers probably quarterly. They come down and see us, and we go to lunch, and you know, we're talking with other banks too, and go in and build a relationship with them. Yeah, there is, and you got to be fine around some of the, you know, you're going to have to invest a lot to make it go, right? And they're going to look at your assets, and they might, you know, hold some of that as collateral. So you're really tied into the deal. It's not as easy as probably we're making it sound. It is a lot of late nights and, you know, going through, you know, how comfortable you are with, you know, betting on yourself.
This is awesome. I'm always super interested in the concept of, you know, if you hired a CEO and brought them in, what would the decisions they would make in the first 100 days or so that we've probably been kicking off or pushing down, you know, or just ignoring? And it sounds like you're making those decisions, right? Like bringing in the experts to just like move faster. How do we move faster and save time and waste less time? How do we get the right people? How do we level up the people? How do we take advantage of, you know, maybe like some financial aspects of, okay, this business, you know, is selling based on equipment and I could bring in the sales and like I could turn this around quickly and so on and so on. So anyway, I appreciate you sharing so much transparency around this.
And I think, Bruce, the industry can learn from this because there are a lot of shops that are handcuffed to their business because they own it. And just because you're in this hamster wheel, if you've been going on 3, 4, 5 years and you're still not paying yourself a healthy salary and you're in the $1 million range, you know, I think one thing, Weston, you know, like it seems like the people that you've worked with have swallowed their pride and ego a little bit. Said like, okay, there's a better way to do this. And so I think there's a lot of shops out there where like, if you merged with another shop, a lot of things could change overnight. Things could go very badly. We've heard about horror stories. We've heard about success stories. But in this age of consolidation, transition to digital, transition to made to order, you don't want to get stuck like when the tide goes out, you know? And so I think it's really, really important that shops are thinking about their exit plan, consolidation plan, merging plan. And then, you know, obviously, Weston, I'm sure reaching out to you. Do you want shop to reach out to you?
If they're selling.
if they want to sell their business, we might lose every subscriber. you might have 1,000 people.
Weston is our only subscriber. Over time as he buys everyone up.
But seriously, like, do you want people reaching out to you? What's the vetting process? What's the dating process? Like, what's that like?
Yeah, no, I would love that. I think I learn a lot talking to other shops, right? So it's not a waste of really anyone's time. I try to, you know, figure out what their pain points are, right? Because they could be mine. You know, I think different areas of the country have, you know, sell different products and different, you know, niches in that. But, you know, definitely an email to me is probably best, like weston@customprintgraphics.com. And then kind of get to know each other a little bit and jump on a call, a Zoom, and start talking. You know, we've looked at big businesses. I think, you know, within the first 100 days, we were down in Alabama looking at, you know, a 50,000 square foot facility with 10 autos. You know, so we're hunting, we're looking, but we're patient. We're not, you know, eager, you know, we don't have a fund behind us saying, hey, we need to go, you know, acquire. So, right. You know, right now it's just my business partner and I that are, doing these deals, and we want to try to keep it that way. So we got to move a little bit slower. But yeah, I'd love to talk to anyone that's, you know, has questions, or, you know, we've sent a bunch of emails out in the beginning. Some of your listeners might have got them. Would you like to sell your business? So through that, we had about 200 people reply to our email campaign. I talked to about 100 of them via email and 50 of them on the phone. So I got to meet a lot of people in the industry before we acquired. So I'm used to talking to it. I've seen probably over 50, you know, financial statements of businesses within the industry. So I have a good, you know, kind of baseline of what, you know, businesses are doing. And, you know, with, you know, a lot of times I can look at the revenue and the headcount, tell you what you're making, you know, pretty easily. So it's no secret. It's, you know, it's easy to find. So some of those conversations are tough. Like, Steven mentioned, yeah, you've looking at someone's business is like looking at their, you know, personal expenses. So it can be a tough conversation, but once you get past that, you get to know someone there. It usually ends well, you know, for both parties, hopefully.
We're all in this to make money. Yeah. It's not supposed to be our life. It's just a job. So that's, it's an interesting perspective you take. We're going to have to do a part two on this in a year and like check in. I think the industry could learn a lot. Thank you for joining us today. This was awesome. And, shamelessly plugging Fabric. We're launching 3 new groups this spring. Weston is in Slack with us. Yeah, it's a cool group.
The group is great. We got to meet in Long Beach. I got to meet face to face with some of the guys. Great conversation. I'm actually going to go out and visit a shop next month in North Carolina. So our group is awesome. These guys are high level thinkers. They look at things that you're not looking at, right? I have my own biases when I'm, you know, just thinking about the business. And I think if you go into Fabric with an open mind, I think it is very healthy for organization, right? To see things through a different lens. So our group is great. We meet once a month and we really get right into it. I know some other groups, you know, maybe Steven, your group's a little bit more hangout, but the guys are, you know, talking about CapEx and, you know, their, you know, 2027 budgets. And I'm like, oh man, you know.
I'm going to share 2 funny stories that happened with Fabric just from being at Long Beach. Weston, you shared this with me. So before every meeting, one of our facilitators, Michael, sends out like a quick to-do or a homework item. And I think it was like your recap of the year. And you jumped in the meeting and you didn't have yours filled out. And you realize you're like, oh shit, all of these guys have this. And I'm the new guy in the room. And I thought that was funny because it's like, okay, like, oh shit, there's other people taking this seriously. So there's like awesome accountability. I also sort of did the same. So I have my own group as well. But then the other part is like, we share like personal goals. And so my accountability buddy for the month is Justin Lawrence. He's my assigned partner, and we've got a personal goal and a professional goal. And we're trying to get each other in the gym. And so we're trying to align our days of when we're going to go. And he's sending me a picture every morning. So it's just like, it's just those kind of like connections and nuances that you start to get. And so we'd love, love more people to join. It's definitely a special place. So, all right. And Printavo.
And oh yeah, I have Printavo. I have Fabric. I mean,
Set Sales. He's got everything locked and loaded. Pronouncers, we appreciate you guys joining. Weston, thank you for being able to share so much too. We'll see you guys on the next episode. Thanks so much for listening. Hopefully that was informative. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to like. Don't forget to hit the bell for notifications if you enjoyed this video. If you enjoy all the stuff we're putting out, it's really helpful. We love to just be able to see it. That means that we're doing a good job. To subscribe, hit the bell for notifications, and hit the like button. And I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.